The pace of research progress is so great that it's now creating options for patients in real time rather than for some future benefit. And I would encourage us to think about research as just another part of the way of our armamentarium when we try to treat diseases like cancer.
This is the Medical Republic podcast. I'm Wendy John. Thanks for joining me. Rare cancers make up a third of all cancer diagnoses and more than 50% of the deaths. But a massive new cancer genomic initiative is hoping to turn things around. It's something Caitlin Delaney knows a lot about. She's a medical professional and she's also living with a rare type of cancer. Through genomic profiling and a hunter-like instinct to find alternative drug therapies and trials, it's been nearly 7 years since Caitlin's initial diagnosis of stage 4 clear cell ovarian cancer. This episode, we get the lowdown from Caitlin Delaney on Australia's newest and largest cancer genomic initiative. Caitlin also explains her treatment pathway and what has swung the dial so far.
I am a healthcare professional. I'm a scientist, but I'm not a research scientist. I have a background in embryology. So I was an IVF scientist for over 20 years, and I was a manager in healthcare too. So I came to this disease and becoming the full-time patient with a set of skills that a lot of other patients don't have. It took me a couple of years to really get my head around it and realize, wow, I have to self-advocate here if I want to be here as long as possible, because I witnessed lots of gaps in the system and there were lots of sliding door moments, I like to say, where if I hadn't asked a certain question or pushed for a different answer or to think outside the box or got a second or third opinion, then the outcome would be very different.
Rare cancers are not just those that are very unusual or less seen. It can be more common cancers that are diagnosed at an age that is rare, for example, breast cancer in young people. Stage 4 cervical cancer is rare, not because cervical cancer itself is uncommon, but because it's rare to get a stage 4 diagnosis now that we have screening. The pathways for treatment are often short, under-resourced, and not reflecting scientific advances. But Caitlin has opened up new pathways for herself, which is a good thing, because if she'd just handed herself over to the standard treatment pathways currently in Australia, her outcome would have likely been very different.
And I'm sure I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today. So I've been extremely lucky in a very unlucky, I guess, diagnosis, but I've also been extremely lucky that I've had my healthcare background and I've had personality, I guess, skills or innate personality traits, I should say, like assertiveness. And there is often medicine and drugs out there, but the patient's not getting linked to it. So we need to fast track that process of bench to bedside, particularly for rare cancer patients whose treatment options are limited.
Investment in rare cancer research in Australia is disproportionately small. Now, a GP or an oncologist can't change the amount of funding that goes into research, but there is some really low-hanging fruit for doctors that could be the difference between life and death for rare cancer patients. Caitlin Delaney is proof of that. Now, although she has a suggestion for oncologists, it's equally relevant for a GP who is, as we know, the gatekeeper for a patient's health journey.
So I guess what I want oncologists to know is that we need to think outside the box with rare cancer patients because all the rare cancer patients I research and connect with, and that includes those with advanced cancers particularly, is that we need to look outside and elsewhere. I think what it comes down with the challenge with rare cancer patients is often the oncologist hasn't come across that specific cancer before and they only know what they know. So they're often just dealing with, and this is a system, this is not a reflection on oncologists, this is the way the system is designed, that they just pretty much want to give you the evidence-based treatment options in front of them. But their science is evolving much faster than the system. So there, as I said earlier, the science and new treatments might be out there, but they're not yet across that. The oncologist or the hospital's not across that. So I guess what's frustrating is the oncologist can often just say, well, we don't know now. We're in uncharted territory.
It might be uncharted territory in Australia, but as Caitlin discovered, there are many more clinical trials happening elsewhere. And that the key that opened up those trials to her was genetic testing.
having the genetic testing to see if you've got any mutations or markers, both germline and somatic, so in blood and tumour, and then from those results, seeing if there's any treatments out there that may not yet be on a clinical trial in Australia but have worked overseas in your cancer or in other cancers that have a similar molecular profile, and then trying to get access to those. And then, of course, if you do get access to those off-label out of trial, you often have to then pay for it. So, but by doing that, I was able to stay stable for 2.5 years. I saw my eldest daughter turn 10.
When the stakes are that high, patients are pretty motivated to try alternatives, Caitlin says, but those alternatives are frequently not offered. The next suggestion Caitlin makes is possibly going to raise the hackles of some doctors listening, but it's important to hear.
We need to get second or third opinions. Don't be threatened by us if we ask that. We're not questioning, you know, our doctors, our oncologist capability. It's just, this is a complex case when you have a rare cancer. And we need to have this multidisciplinary approach, just like we do in a hospital where we bring together radiographers and, you know, the oncologist and the surgeon. We sometimes need to actually look at other places, you know, and that might be overseas.
Caitlin firmly believes that access to new pathways can be enabled through compassion, open communication, and not making any assumptions about a patient.
So often I've not had treatments offered to me because they're not on the PBS. And although I am a public patient and we certainly are not rolling in money in our family, but we will find that money. And that's up for the patient to make, not for the oncologist to make. So I think all options should be on the table with risks and cost-benefit analysis and talking about all that with the patient. And I just want all oncologists to know how important that genetic testing is. And I'll say it again because that can be the gateway to that personalized medicine, which can be a game changer, and to get to that really targeted therapy as opposed to the, you know, the chemo, and can often get a patient matched to a clinical trial as well.
Now, given Caitlin's professional background and lived experience, I asked her if she had any other suggestions for doctors, GPs or oncologists.
So I think that first step is acknowledging, and AI will help with this in the future, but acknowledging that there may be some symptoms that could be cancer, even though the patient's younger or even though they don't fit into what normal symptoms look like for cancer. I think any persistent symptom that's new should be explored, and a cancer should be investigated and not ruled out.
Once people are diagnosed and in that referral pathway, Caitlin says it's critical to refer to 2 or 3 specialists if you can and find out who is the expert for that particular rare cancer. Another way a doctor can make a difference, Caitlin says, is by taking a more holistic approach to treatment.
We need to access those integrative and supportive care services like psychology services, anything with allied healthcare professionals like massage, exercise physiologist, reflexology, acupuncture, dietitian, financial support, you know, looking at the whole patient. What's their family situation? Is that patient needing to work? Do they have insurance? But also realizing that genetic testing is critical. And that might be more that the oncologist space, but I think for the GP to know that too, the more knowing those emerging new treatments, genetic tests, personalized medicine, clinical trials, they are critical for all cancer patients, but especially for rare cancer patients whose treatment options may be limited.
Carefully is a compassion training organisation that Caitlin founded a couple of years after her initial diagnosis. Carefully primarily helps staff and organisations to cultivate compassionate care. Their clients are not just healthcare providers either. They work across a broad range of insurers, government, big pharma, universities.
So we are in a compassion crisis in healthcare, and you don't have to look far to see that. And my experience of losing my mother-in-law due to a lack of compassionate care and a really tragic circumstances, and then my diagnosis combined with my healthcare background, I have seen the impact of compassionate care and lack thereof. Worst case scenario can lead to death. And when it's a great, you know, when it's done well, it can lead to patients like myself actually thriving, not just surviving. But not everyone gets it right. But what I'm trying to do with my business Carefully is educate everyone on how powerful that compassion is, because it is an antidote to burnout. You actually can reduce the risk of burnout, and it has a benefit for the giver of compassion as well as the receiver.
Caitlin Delaney is alive for a lot of reasons, but at the core of it, it was precision medicine, genetic testing, and therefore being able to access a broader range of clinical trials. Normally, people with rare cancers are often excluded from many clinical trials and PBS-listed drugs. Caitlin says it's often luck of the draw whether you're offered a clinical trial or not. But that has just changed. Now in Australia, everyone with a rare or incurable cancer is able to access PROSPECT, a biomedtech initiative that provides precision medicine screening and access to new clinical trials. Now, PROSPECT is an acronym. It stands for the Precision Oncology Screening Platform Enabling Clinical Trials. It is what it says on the label. It's a clever collaboration between the University of New South Wales, New South Wales government, and a whole range of private and public players in the Australian medical research sector. Basically, it aims to speed up the time from bench to bed.
I'm excited about PROSPECT because we're so overlooked as a community. So to have an investment at a national level and people backing it and saying, we see you, and we want to change this. And to have that rare cancer data is critical to changing the outcomes and getting that bench to bedside treatments fast tracked. So having the data, offering the genetic testing that's funded and then linking to treatments and clinical trials, and then being able to use AI or algorithms with that data and match it internationally as well. So it's the future of cancer care, and it's really exciting that's happening here.
PROSPECT is partly the brainchild of Professor David Thomas, Director of the Centre for Molecular Oncology at the University of New South Wales. Professor Thomas is also head of the Cancer Division of the Garvan Institute of Medical Research, and he's CEO of Omico, the not-for-profit that has been set up to run PROSPECT Cancer Screening Program.
The pace of research progress is so great that it's now creating options for patients in real time rather than for some future benefit. And I would encourage us to think about research as just another part of the way of our armamentarium when we try to treat diseases like cancer.
The PROSPECT Cancer Screening Program has support from 80% of oncologists around Australia already. But as you would know, support only goes so far when health jurisdictions and funding regulations come into play. So in order to get this new cancer genomics initiative up and running, Professor Thomas and his colleagues had to think outside the box.
So as you know, high-tech healthcare is generally run through hospitals, and hospitals are funded by state and territory governments. So we wanted to conduct a national program in precision oncology, and the two options were to go through the state and territory governments individually and thence to the hospitals, or as we did, to set up a non-profit vehicle that enabled all the cancer centers with whom we interacted in every state and territory to allow them to work together to deliver this national precision oncology program. Essentially, the value proposition behind genomic profiling of patient tumors is intimately connected with rational drug development, the development of drugs that can make use of that information to get the right treatment to the right patient. That model of personalized care or precision oncology is probably at best 10 years old. Our role, therefore, was to bring that technology at scale to Australian cancer patients. And that's essentially the value proposition behind Omico.
And their success measures? Well, there's a few. Firstly, getting 23,000 Australians access to genomics profiling to see if they can then be matched to an existing treatment or a trial that might make a difference. They've also set up what's essentially a biomedtech ecosystem that the New South Wales government is backing, that they hope will entice the global pharmaceutical industry to come to Australia to run more trials. But back to the patient, how does Omico's PROSPECT cancer screening program work?
We use that archival tissue that's already present, and we just do the technology, apply the technology to those samples. That means we source the samples from the pathology lab, which is the holding place. We do collect a blood sample, and we have a quite efficient system for sending out what we call a bio bottle to arrange for a blood sample to be collected. But the patient doesn't have to travel to a big city to have that done. We just crossed the 1,000 patient mark last week.
The cancer screening program is open to any patient with incurable advanced solid cancers, and it doesn't matter whether they're rare or common. And it doesn't matter where you live either.
I'll just say that regional and rural Australia is very important to us, and we're specifically trying to promote the program in regional cancer centres and to work with our clinical colleagues in regional cancer centres. And that specifically applies also to Indigenous cancer patients. Both rural and regional, as well as Indigenous cancer patients, have demonstrably worse outcomes, and we don't want them to be left behind. We have a call centre model that enables clinicians to refer patients from anywhere in the country, and we take care of it as in the background.
So for the 150 people diagnosed each day with a rare cancer, it's a new pathway that can make the difference, and not just in the future.
It's important for all of us to understand how important research now is to providing treatment options for patients. It's not a philanthropic exercise with no connection with patient interests. It's directly a mechanism for receiving treatments that might make a difference in their lives. And that programs like ours are designed to create options for patients where they may not exist currently. So referral of patients who are in need to programs like ours is welcome and critical really to our success.
Doctors can refer a patient through the Omico website under Cancer Screening Program. And there's a link to the online referral form in the show notes. We've just been speaking with Professor David Thomas, CEO of Omico. And earlier we spoke with Caitlin Delaney, founder and director of Carefully Compassion Training Organisation. Thanks for joining us today on the Medical Republic podcast. I'm your host, Wendy John. Thanks for tuning in. For more news and views, head to medicalrepublic.com.au. We love to keep you informed. You might also be keen to check out our new publication, Health Services Daily, which is daily news and analysis for health leaders across Australia. Check it out at healthservicesdaily.com.au.